kind of morning that don't fade away. Like it, yeah, let it play, share it, yeah, pass it on your way, sub up, don't hesitate, David L. Gray in the morning, don't be late. Welcome in to David L. Gray in the morning. My pleasure to have you here. Thanks for coming. Thanks for tuning in. We're live streaming on Facebook, YouTube, X, however you're watching, wherever you're listening from. Thanks for tuning in. I got a live one for you. Hey, Cisco, one of the biggest tech companies in Silicon Valley, just cut 1,100 jobs. We got to talk about it. AI is coming for all your jobs, but the Catholic Church has something to say about that. We'll get into that. This is the live show. After the live show is over, there won't be any more live show. But if you're a member of the channel, YouTube channel, you better see the recording of it, the saved version. But I'll be cutting up some clips after the show is over, cut up some of our segments. But first, let's go ahead and get into the saint of the day. This is David L. Gray in the morning. Our saint of the day being sponsored by St. Dominic's Media. Hop over to stdominicsmedia.com. Make sure you sign up for our mailing list. We're going to send you the audio version of my book, The Liturgical Sense of the Readings at Mass. I don't know where I put it at. So you'll get that book. We always had that ready for you, audio version. We send it out Thursdays. And also, we have courses, online courses. We have retreats. We have podcasts. A lot of stuff for free over there. But also, check out our books. Check out our membership. We have about, I think, seven books that we're publishing this year. So check out our book club. It's called The Hounds of Heaven. And you join for a one-time fee and get all the books we've ever published in the past and every book we will publish in the future. For things, I just like 300 books. Bucks. It's just one of the best deals in Catholic media. So that is stdominicsmedia.com, our sponsor for today's saint of the day, who is St. Peter of Tarantasi. He entered, he's born in the rugged valleys of Savoy around 1102. And he entered in a Cistercian order of seeking silence and simplicity. Now, if you've taken our, over St. Dominic's Media, if you've taken our, what's that called? Our memory type, our cognitive memory type assessment. So what is the Cistercian order that this saint belonged to? What type of spirituality is that? Well, that would fall under, they would have the memory type of the analytical conceptual memory. So these are people who remember ideas, patterns, and structures. It feels a lot like Benedictine spirituality. So again, hop over to stdominicsmedia.com and take out our assessment about how to understand what type of memory type you have, because that's going to unlock your spiritual life. But yeah, so he belonged to the Cistercian order, and he's like, say, he's seeking simplicity and silence. Yet God called him from the cloister to the mountains to shepherd souls, heal the visions, and build the church's witness in a fractured world. As Archbishop of Tarantasi, Peter became a living bridge between rulers and the poor. He reformed clergy life, founded hospitals and schools, and turned his episcopal palace into a refuge for travelers and beggars. His leadership was marked not by power, but by gentleness and justice. He was a bishop who carried his crozier as a staff of peace. When conflict tore at the heart of Christendom, Peter stood as a mediator, reminding kings and monks alike that charity is stronger than pride. His humility and wisdom earned him the title of Father of the Alps, a man whose life, whose holiness softened even the hardest hearts. He died in 1174, leaving behind a legacy of reconciliation and mercy that still echoes through the valleys today that he loved. St. Peter of Tarantasi, Shepherd of Peace and Mercy, pray for us. I'll be right back with a quick commentary on today's readings at Mass. This is David L. Gray in the morning. Hey, before we get into today's commentary for Readings of Mass, I want to remind you about my book, The Liturgical Sense for the Readings of Mass. This is your A, but we have them for years B and for year C. If you want to learn how to live the liturgical life, that is how to live the Mass in the world, in your daily life, this is your book. Also, it unpacks scriptures in very insightful and very Catholic ways. But what I really want you to do is to make sure you go over to stdominicsmedia.com and sign up for our mailing list. Because what if you don't like to read? What if you don't like words on paper? What if you don't have time? Well, I have something for you as well. If you join a mailing list, you'll get the audio version of this book for every reading of Mass for that particular Sunday in your email box for free. So sign up for our mailing list. Again, that's at stdominicsmedia.com. Let's go ahead and get into the commentary for today's readings of Mass. Thank you. Thanks for coming back in to David L. Gray. Good morning. Glad to have you here. Let's roll into our commentary. So our first reading is from the book of Acts. We'll get into that. Our responsorial psalm is, I will give you thanks among the people, O Lord. And then our gospel is from John chapter 15, verses 12 through 10, when Jesus speaks about his greatest commandment, saying there is no love greater than this. And he says that I no longer call you slaves because a slave does not know what his master is doing. I have called you friends because I've told you everything I've heard from my Father. And he says that no one has greater love than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. So beautiful. So in the first reading, this is very interesting. Again, in Acts, you always run into these historical facts. some tidbits from just how life was at that time. And we talked about one of these, I think on Monday, we had talked about how there's an episode there when the people thought of the Laconium area, they thought that Peter and Barnabas was Zeus and Hermes, and how that was actually part of a very old story that they had there about Zeus and Hermes. And it's just a logical reason why they thought Paul and Barnabas was the gods are coming back into town. They had come back. So in today's reading is one of those as well. So, you know, there's this issue with the Gentiles coming into the church. And so they had some of the first ecumenical council when they had to discuss circumcision and how do non-Jews enter the church? And this is a big decision. So today it says the apostles and the presbyters in agreement with the whole church, they came up, what do we do with these people? One of the things they said is that it is a decision of the Holy Spirit and of us not to place on you any burden beyond these necessities, namely to abstain from meat sacrificed to idols, from blood, and meat from strangled animals. And you're reading that and you're like, well, first of all, who's eating meat from strangled animals? Not only that, like, who's strangling animals? Could you imagine somebody just choking out a pig until it dies? Like, who's eating meat? Who's strangling animals? Like, whose job is that? Who has time to strangle an animal? And second, who's eating that meat? Like, what's the benefit? So it's strange that would be like that. That comes from the apostolic church. This is like one of the apostles' like first decisions as a church. Hey guys, don't eat meat from strangled animals. Not telling people, hey, you guys need to stop strangling these animals. They deserve to die mercifully. No, they said, don't eat meat from strangled animals. So why is that a thing? I think that's interesting. That's a great historical insight that could, unpack the readings for us in the scriptures just a little more deeply. So when apostles, when they tell the converts to the church to abstain from meat or strangled animals, so what they're doing here, they're addressing a very real world issue in the ancient world. So in the Greco-Roman pagan worship, animals were often killed without cutting their throat, without being bled out. Rather, they were oftentimes strangled. They were suffocated or they would have their necks broken, or they would just be clubbed to death. So anyway, animal could be killed without cutting their throats was what the pagans wanted, because they believed that animal blood carried some spiritual power. Right, so it has some. So that's why they wanted to keep the animal blood intact, because the blood itself contains some sort of spiritual power. Right, so and so that was the meat that they would use to do their rituals and their offerings and to their idols. It was that type of meat, because if you want to offer up an animal to a god, then that animal should have all its power still in it, should have all its blood. Okay. And so eating that meat meant, that type of meat meant participating in the pagan idea, even indirectly, because that those were, it was just such, it was such a normal thing in the culture. It was such, it was just part of the ethos of the culture that this is what was normal. Everyone knew this, that if you're going to eat meat and you're a pagan, well, you want that meat to be meat from an animal who didn't have his neck cut. That was the good stuff. That was a choice meat. That was a prime rib. Right? That was the if you're in Florence, you're going to eat a Florentine steak. Right? That's just the best steak in all of Italy, perhaps maybe even all the world. Some people argue with the Wagyu steak in Japan or something like that, but in all of Europe, people would say, no, it's the Florentine. So this was the choice meat of that time, like meat from animals that were that was strangled or suffocated or clubbed to death. Now, Jewish law is interesting here, because in Jewish law, it required that animals be bled out completely, because it was the opposite of the pagans. Because the Jews believe the animal, they'd be bled out completely, because that in the animal blood was the life. Okay, so the life is in the blood. That's what Jews believe. Life is in the blood. So that's why they believe the animals had to be, their blood had to be drained so that there was no life in it. So it's the complete opposite of the pagan idea. So when Jewish and the Gentiles, they're coming together, when they're eating together, this became like a major point of tension, right? Strangled meat still had blood on the inside, and for Jews that's just completely forbidden. Now for Gentiles, it's normal. This is what we do. And so for apostles, this is literally, no pun intended, a recipe for division. So the apostolic decree, it wasn't random here. It was a pastoral solution. They gave four basic rules to avoid meat sacrifice to idols, avoid idol meat, blood, and strangled animals, and avoid unlawful unions. And these were all really drawn from the Noahide laws. Really just a universal moral code for all of humanity. So these weren't meant to be like permanent dietary laws for Christians or anything like that. They were really just the minimum requirements to allow Jews and Gentiles to sit at the same table in peace, to relieve this tension. And so this law, it resolved, this wasn't like an adoption of Judaism either. Like Christianity does not contain a Jewish belief that the blood had to be drained because the blood contains some sort of life. But we don't believe that the blood is your life force. And instead, the Christian, we believe that is the blood of Christ that is sacred. Like, because he is the true Lamb of God, who, by the way, wasn't bled out. Right? So it's an interesting intersect here between the Jewish idea of animals and lambs and turtle doves being drained of blood, and Christ himself being the true blood. And we drink, it's just a lot here that the apostles are unpacking in just this short decree. So that's why, as a church grew and separated from the pagan temple system, that these dietary laws, they faded away. right? So the focus moved from just this ritual purity to really the Eucharistic communion, right? So rather than focusing on, you know, our concern about animal blood, either keeping it or draining it, really we're going to start this shift to really just focusing on just the blood of Christ. And so Jesus Christ and his blood resolves in himself, he resolves this tension that was going on concerning just things that are normal in that day. So that little line about strangled animals is actually a window into the early church and learning how, you know, the people lived in that time, how families lived and what it meant to reject the pagan idea and what it meant to respect Jewish sensitivities and ultimately finding unity in the blood of Christ, the true Lamb of God, not in the blood of these animals. All right, this is David on Grand Morning. I'll be right back with our main story, and I'll see you on the other side.
Hey there, I am David O. Gray. I am a Catholic theologian getting my doctoral degree in liturgical catechesis from the Catholic University of America. And this is my morning show. Welcome in. We do this every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Start off with Joy in the Morning, where I give you the saint of the day and an enlightening commentary on the readings of Mass. And then we get into something interesting. I'm looking at something in faith or culture from a lens of a Catholic who believes in faith, reason, logic, and the teachings of the church. There's no deviation from the magisterium here. Why people like this channel, why people sub, why people keep coming back is because I look at things from a very critical lens. This is no emotions applied, no groupthink, no talking points to the day, none of that. Nothing can't be. I'm not saying what I'm supposed to say. I'm saying what's true. Sometimes we get in those boxes, and I think that's very dangerous when we get comfortable and we just go along with what people think and what we're supposed to believe. No, you know, if it's not dogmatic truth, then we ask the questions, why? And so that's what we're doing here. And I hope that you like it. Yeah, I may get emotional myself. I may call something stupid or retarded. I may crack some jokes. But that's why people like this channel. That's why they sub. That's why they share. That's why they like. That's why they join a community, and I hope that you do too. Let's get back to the show. Welcome back into David O. Grand Morning. And I noticed that you guys were commenting about the dietary laws. I noticed that more and more said, very interesting as I started a carnivore diet last year. Yeah. I remember it was a couple years ago, or was it last year? I was on a carnivore diet, probably beginning last year, I was on this carnivore diet. And I had lost all the weight that I wanted to lose. I think I was like in the 180s then, and I got down to like 175, which is like my ideal weight. But the side effect, Mara, was that somehow that like really messed up my cholesterol or something like that. And so I go to the doctor, and she's like, oh, you got to get off of that. You have to go to some sort of Mediterranean diet. So it's unfortunate because I thought that diet really helped me a lot in just converting to the carnivore diet, like gave me more energy. I felt like a better person, but I guess at my age, I guess it just, or what was going on in my body just wasn't ideal. So, hey, Brianna, how you doing, sis? Got John B here. Hey, thanks everybody for coming in. So let's get into today's main story. Run this down for you real quick. I think it's very interesting. You guys know I've been talking about AI and automation and UBI a lot lately. Because I just think it's a fast moving thing that it's going to hit us like bricks, and we're going to be very slow to respond to this thing. And because we're sleeping on this, the government and all these agencies, they're going to be able to have a lot of control over our lives because it's going to hit us kind of hard. So yesterday, Cloudflare, one of the biggest tech companies in the Silicon Valley, fired 1,100 people on Thursday. Not 11 people, not 110, no, 1,100 people gone, boom, Thursday. And these people came into work Thursday, you know, they're sitting at their desk, maybe drinking just a little bit of a morning joe, thinking about what they're going to do for the weekend, maybe thinking about what they're going to do for lunch, gone, fired. And the reason that Cloudflare gave, catch this, and you need to hear this very carefully. The reason why Cloudflare said they had to go, they were fired 1,100 people. They said because they said this was the agentic AI era, the agentic artificial intelligence
era? What is the agentic artificial intelligence era? This is going to be a word you're starting to hear more and more. This is the new reason. And so I want to make sure that you understand this and that you caught that term and that you keep it, because that phrase is doing a lot of work right now. Agentic means artificial intelligence. It's not just answering your questions. We're so far beyond chatbots. I know people are still using Google for, you know, Gemini and Copilot and ChatGPT to chat with. That's yesterday. It's so far yesterday. It's like 1995 at this point. If you're still using AI for chatbots, you're on a dial-up phone at this time, right? And so artificial intelligence is not just answering your questions no more. That's not what it's about. Artificial intelligence now is about taking actions. It's making decisions. It's operating autonomously on its own without you, without taking any of your inputs. So they're not just automatically tasking anymore. They're replacing the human agent. So your job isn't just being made easier anymore because there's some things you can have AI help you with. No, your job is being absorbed. You've trained it. You've trained AI systems to do exactly the things that they're doing now. And in the last 3 months alone, Cloudflare says artificial intelligence usage inside a company went up 600%. 600% in 3 months. And now 1,100 people found out what that means for them in real time, personally. Now, you might be saying right now, David, why are you talking about a tech company? Why are you talking about AI again? Laying off people on a Catholic morning show. Well, the answer is because the Catholic Church has something to say about exactly this moment, something very prophetic that the church said over 100 years ago. And that, again, that nobody's talking about. The church and the leadership and all these, the cashiers, they're talking about everything but what's going to affect people most dramatically within the next few months, within the next years. The whole world is going to be completely different. And what is the church doing? I don't know, blessing ice? They're still talking about global warming? That's you know, whether, you know, some island is going to be underground, underwater, understand that is an issue, sure. But the most pressing issue right now is that no one is going to have a job. Yet at the same time, God has called us to labor. This is perfectly the right time for the church to be saying something about something. I mean, look at this slide right here. I mean, look at this. This is what's going on. And I need you to feel what's happening here, because we've been getting these lit headlines one at a time. They've been dripping in, and all of them is not here. And because they're dripping in, everything's starting to feel normal. We're getting started. They're rocking us asleep, right? So let me put this all together for you all at once so you can actually feel what this is. This year, 2026, Microsoft has cut 9,000 jobs. Amazon, 6,000 jobs. Oracle, 30,000 jobs. Meta fired 3,600 people. Back in January. And then just announced another 8,000 more coming up in just 2 weeks from now. They're getting, Meta's firing 8,000 more people. There was a time when you were coming out of college, and if you got a call from Microsoft, you got a call from Google, you got a call from Meta, your life was made. You were on easy street. You literally made it. That was literally your goal when you were an undergrad or in grad school, to get a job at Meta. All those people got fired. They had reached the pinnacle of their success. They've made it. They're wearing socks and pajamas to work. They got skateboards running around. They're just having a good life, making all the money. By Felicia. Salesforce, which is a leader in the industry of customer resource management software and things like that, laid off workers and replaced them with the CEO called Digital Labor. Digital Labor. Duolingo. A little owl in your app phone that guilt trips you about learning Spanish, German, publicly declared itself AI first. cut 10% of his contract workforce, replaced them with AI. And then he tried to walk it back when people got mad. They thought you wouldn't notice. Goldman Sachs, not a tech company, a bank, already warned that AI is already replacing between 5 and 20,000 net job losses per month in the most expensive sector. Let me say that again. 5 and 20,000 net jobs per month. In the first quarter of 2026 alone, just the first 3 months of this year, more than 73,000 jobs were cut by 95 companies. And I just have some of them up here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Cut 73,000 jobs in just the first 3 months of this year. April added another 83,000. We're already past 150,000 jobs this year. Documented layoffs, 5 months. And tech is just on the leading edge of this. This is going to affect everyone. It's going to go from Goldman Sachs to Burger King. Everybody's going. These numbers haven't hit the service industry. They haven't just hit the service industry. I mean, it's hitting legal. What do you need all these lawyers for? All these paralegals? What do you need a paralegal for anymore? Because we've trained AI to do the paralegal work. The healthcare billing industry. That used to be a good job. I remember just a few years ago, my third youngest daughter, she really, the college thing just wasn't working for her, right? We send her to like 3 colleges. It just wasn't her thing. All right. And that's fine. You know, college isn't for everyone. But I remember a conversation we had just a few years ago. I said, well, hey, how about medical billing? She said, yeah, that's a good job. I'm going to go to some school in Columbus. And she did some Columbus State thing or something like that, you know, to get trained in medical billing. That's not a job. That's not a job anymore. Accounting. I went to my undergrad degree is in accounting. I worked in accounting like 3 years. No, I'm sorry, about 10 years. That's not a job anymore. So there is a report saying corporate America is on pace to replace 3 million workers total by the end of 2026. 3 million workers by the end of 2026. 3 million human beings. 3 million people with families, with mortgages, with kids who need new shoes, with parents who need medical. 3 million Imago Day sitting in front of a computer receiving an email saying, hey, you know what? You don't have to come into work today. AI has, and you don't have to come into work tomorrow either. Matter of fact, you're stay home for good because we're restructuring for the agentic era. I need you to feel the weight of that number because 3 million is not just a statistic. 3 million is everyday working people in the state of Ohio, in the state of Mississippi. That's probably all Mississippi has, right? About 3 million people gone from the workforce. That's more people than, probably the city of Cincinnati, Columbus. 3 million is probably, about Mississippi, Iowa, like whole states worth of people, of human beings are losing their job this year. Now here's something that I want you also to grasp here about this whole agentic era, right? Like, we should talk about what the church teaches here because this is important. If the church would actually focus on this, because we have something powerful to say about this that can actually help people. But you know how it is. Our faith has the teachings from Christ himself that can heal the world. We have a liturgy that can heal the world. But we want to talk about everything else but that, don't we? Right? But the church teaches, though, that work is not a punishment. It's a calling. Labor is a calling. But I know a lot of people walking around treating their job like it's a cross, usually because of the people they work with. And I know for some of y'all, it might be. But the concept of work, theologically, is not a curse. The curse in Genesis was not work itself. The curse was actually the difficulty to work. Adam was already in the garden doing something before the fall. Remember, the first thing that God calls Adam to do is go work. Go take care of the animals, tend to the earth. Adam is created and God gives him a job. He didn't have to go on LinkedIn. He didn't have to go on Indeed. He didn't have to go anywhere. God gave him labor from the moment of his making. He gave him a job of a gardener. The first human being was a working man. And so St. John, we see this with St. John Paul II in his encyclical Labor Exercens. And that's the document is called On Human Work. It was written in 1981. And he says that work is not merely a means to earn a paycheck. He said work is a calling, a radical calling from God. We are built for labor. Because through that labor, we discover God. We discover ourselves. Adam discovers himself in labor. And he builds a deeper relationship with God through labor. This is what we see throughout Scripture. So when a human being participates in labor, he participates in creation. It isn't just for money. It doesn't just fill the time. The human person was built just for this work. So that's the theology. And that's what doesn't change. Our work is our participation in God's creative power. We labor in God's creation. That's what we do. So that's the theology. Work is how you exercise your God-given gifts. Like God gave us gifts for what? To use them, to labor. Our work is how we imprint ourselves in the world. It's how we pay it forward, as they say. How we make the world a better place for those who are still yet to come. Our work is connected in a divine way from the beginning to the end of creation. So, and the church teaches that our work has dignity, not because of what it produces, but because of who is doing it. That is the human person made in the image and likeness of God. So because we have permanent and inviolable dignity, dignity and sacredness that we can't lose no matter what we do, that sacredness and dignity transfers into our work. Our work is sacred and it has dignity because we were made in the image and likeness of God. So when we work for the fruits of God and to produce the fruits of God, that labor is connected to the divine plan. So, and I think here's where sometimes it gets like personal for people, because what that means is that when you go to work, even when that work feels ordinary, unglamorous, even that work is not going into a job, but maybe the labor that you do at home as a parent, as a spouse, is sometimes labor that's unappreciated. It's repetitive, again, unglamorous. But the church teaches that you're doing something, you're exercising something divine. Because you're using the gifts that God has given you that nobody else has in quite the same way that you do. You're using those gifts in a particular way to solve problems. Your particular way of talking to customers, your particular way of understanding your spouse and your children and what needs to be done in your family. That is your imago Dei at work, because you're doing the thing that God created you to do. When you're doing the thing that God created you to do, you're working, literally. Now, let me ask you something. So when Cloudflare replaces the human worker for an AI agent, what replaces the dignity? Where does the dignity go? Does the AI get it? Is there dignity in a server farm running algorithms at 3 a.m. that nobody told it to do? A time of day that nobody really is caring about anything. Everyone's sleeping. Where did the dignity go? Because this is, I think, really a fundamental category error in how we're thinking about this. The AI doesn't have dignity. Dignity is the property of the human person created in the image and likeness of God. We have dignity because of who created us. The things that man create do not have that imago Dei. We can't transfer our human dignity into an inanimate object, no matter how alive it seems. A created being made in image and likeness of God, that is what has dignity. An AI is a tool, is a very sophisticated tool, but it's still a tool. And we're in the process of replacing the human person who has dignity, who can give labor dignity, to a tool that doesn't. We're trading the irreplaceable for the reproducible. That's the difference. So no, dignity was in the person, right? And the person just got a severance package and some sort of email saying they weren't needed. Their dignity isn't needed anymore. This is going to have profound impacts, I think, when labor doesn't have dignity attached to it. This is so complex. This is so deep. I don't think we fully thought it through yet. I'm just saying this stuff out loud now. But even as I say it, it sounds even scarier. And no, I'm not saying that I'm, a Luddite. You know, I'm not sitting here saying that we need to smash the machines. You guys know that's not me. The church has never said that technology is evil. The church says that we can misuse technology, specifically when it strips away the person and the dignity and reduces them to functions and treats human beings as replaceable units of productivity. Yeah, the church says that's evil. That's the line. The church has never been behind. Oh, we should not use modern technology because we know, no, we can use technology to advance and to promote the glory of God. The problem was when it replaces the dignity. Okay. But here's a line that's being crossed. Like Cloudflare's CEO put out an internal memo and I read it. And in that memo, he used language that said if you remove the word AI and replaced it with anything else, it would sound completely dystopian. Now, he talked about AI fundamentally, artificial intelligence fundamentally changing the nature of work, about the company becoming artificial intelligence first, not America first, AI first, about humans no longer being needed for certain roles because AI can do them faster and cheaper, with no dignity, by the way. That's the standard now. That's what a human being is being measured against. Not a wisdom, not intelligence, not mercy, not conscience, not creativity born from suffering and experiencing love. No, just faster and cheaper. That's a hell of a thing to compare a human person to. The human person who comes with all types of good baggage that really just is infectious in a good way to labor and relationships at work. There's nothing that you can compare the human person to, but we're being reduced to the idea of faster and cheaper. I don't know what happened. I mean, we could name some things happened to be sure. I think when capitalism stops caring about the human person, that's what happens. When faster and cheaper becomes virtues, that's what happened. Faster and cheaper. You know what it costs to run an AI model on a server 24 hours a day, 7 days a week? We're talking about hundreds of dollars a month, maybe thousands on a sophisticated one. You know what it costs a human being the same cognitive work, a salary, a living wage, benefits, retirement, vacation, you know, 2 weeks vacation, maybe more than that. Some of these new companies, maybe they're having a hard time at home. Now they need some mental health care coverage. Maybe they had a baby. Now they need some time off, you know, 401k pension, you know, it's, yeah, I get it. It's a lot. The machine is faster, cheaper. It doesn't call off. I get it. You know, it's cheaper than having to feed somebody's family, helping them pay their kids' college tuition, right? I get it. We're just optimizing. Fine. You know, Ram Navarum in the Catholic Church, written what, over 50, 60 years ago. Over 100 years ago at this point. Yeah. You know, it's looking, you know, we can read that to look at this and say, you know, this is nothing new. The Catholic Church has been screaming about this since we first got factories. It was in 1891 when Pope, Leo XIII, our current Pope, named himself after this current Pope. Leo XIII wrote the document called Ram Navarum. It was called On Capital and Labor. And so this was in the middle of the Industrial Revolution. So the textile machines, they were up. Railroads were being built. Machines were replacing craftsmen left and right. And so Leo XIII decided to say something from a Catholic voice and decided to look at what was happening and seeing how it was affecting people's lives. And he said that this whole factory thing is a moral crisis. That's what he said. Because he saw the pattern emerging then. Workers were becoming appendages to machines. Machines weren't replacing all human persons. No, human persons were... machines were doing the work now, and human beings were working those machines. And he thought that, whoa, that meant that the human person, you weren't a person anymore. You were a hand, a pair of hands that turned a lever, turned a knob, turned a wheel. And he said that that reduces the human person, and therefore it's a violation of the natural law of God's design. So that's what Leo XIII said just about machines. You know, which is just normal today. You go to any, I don't know, plastic factory, there's machines cranking out plastic, and then there's somebody pulling labor, someone taking the plastic off the machine, maybe cutting up, same with metal. The machines, you know, he thought that, man, that piece right there, the machine is doing, that was supposed to be a human doing that. And so he said that workers have a right to a living wage even still. You're not going to, because you have a machine doing something now, you're not going to cut back on paying people a fair wage, a wage that keeps them alive and takes care of their family and puts food on the table. You're not going to stop saying that the human being participates in the goods of creation, not just being used by machines. So that was a radical thing to say back in 1891. And that was rooted in the idea that a human being has, again, dignity and worth, and that's intrinsic. And it cannot be reduced by some sort of economic output. And you know what happened? Leo XIII said that. We listened in America. We built a labor movement. We built regulations. A middle class started. There was minimum wage eventually. And we said no human being is going to be just a cost to be minimized, because things are now faster and cheaper. And for a while, from about 1945 to 1975 in America, that worked. That led to what people eventually will call the American dream, is what they called it. But what happened is that we forgot the reason why we built it. We forgot the technology. And now we're running the same experiment again. Something has come along faster and cheaper. And we're replacing it, or replacing a human person with it. We forgot again once about human dignity, that people deserve a fair wage. That people are not human person, our labor is connected to the divine plan, that our goods have dignity. And we can't be devalued. So everything that Leo XIII talked about and the world responded to is we're History has repeated itself and is not going to end any different. But it's funny. So that was the church's answer, you know, Ramnavar. But now we're looking at a whole different thing here with the world and the governments and different systems coming up with a plan that is really like the antithesis to Ramnavaram. And that looks like that is what is going to win the day. Because here's where it gets really interesting. And by interesting, I mean deeply spiritually alarming in a way that nobody is framing correctly. And you've heard me talk about this a few times, but I'll say it again. Because what's happening, the people causing this problem, like I said, they already have an answer for it. The human being is being replaced. And their answer is, we're not going to do what we did last time. We're not going to give you a minimum wage. We're not going to give you some sort of fair labor. We're not going to give you all those things we gave you last time when we tried to replace you. The gig is up. What we're going to do now is we're going to just pay you to sit your butt at home. We don't need you. That's the answer. We don't need you. And we don't want you. We don't want your baggage in a workplace. We don't want you calling in sick. We don't want, we have the machines now. Elon Musk, the man who's building robots and the artificial intelligence that are taking jobs, went on social media back in April and proposed what he called universal high income. And a couple of months ago, I remember I played you a video about this. Not universal basic income, that's different. Well, Elon Musk is proposing universal high income. He said that it's the best way to deal with the artificial intelligence job losses. The government sends everyone checks. Problem solved. Go home. We don't need you. We'll just pay you. The same way, you know, we've done that with farmers for a long time. We don't need you to farm your land. We'll just pay you a subsidy. Stay home. But who's going to pay for that? What impact will that eventually have on capitalism and inflation? That's the transition I keep telling you guys about. The transition is going to be nasty work. This little transition we have when everyone is just getting paid. Inflation is going to go crazy because everyone has money. It's going to be a nasty. We're going to have to pass through socialism to get to the place that we eventually have to be. Yeah, 3 million people out of work just this year. Companies replacing them with artificial intelligence. Is artificial intelligence paying taxes? Are they paying dispenses for the American debt? Where's the money coming from? Maybe it comes from the government's ability to tax just a few companies that are going to be making all the money for a while. But again, if we all have money, inflation is going to go crazy. But you're looking at, the reason why this is so crazy, again, it's moving so fast. And why the government is going to just take control over this whole thing and screw everyone over. Because no one's paying attention. You're going to be on welfare, basically. And the machines and the people who own them are going to be making all the money. And so the government is going to become the distributor of the survival checks. And a human being is going to be completely removed from the economy, from being a producer. And you're just going to receive a check. You'll spend it. You'll go back home. And you'll have no role in creation. Nothing. Zero. No participation in creation. No contribution. No dignity of yours to share. You become what they've always wanted you to become, a consumer. That's all they ever wanted from the beginning, to just to make you a consumer. Now look, universal basic income, UBI, has been kicking around policy circles for decades. We got cities and states already on it. or at least making plans. Cities like Chicago and LA, they're already giving out checks. Remember Andrew Yang? I think it was last election cycle, the guy was running for president. That was his platform. He was way ahead of a curve. You should have listened to him. The UK government, they're working on it. I think they're starting in January this year. Taiwan has been plotting it. Sam Altman, the CEO of OpenAI, the person who built ChatGPT, he's personally funding a UBI program. The people building machines that take the jobs. Are you paying attention? The people who are building the machines, people like Sam Altman, Elon Musk, the people who are replacing you, telling you to stay at home, are the same people who are building the UBI and UHI systems. You just have to sit with that for a moment and just meditate on that and think about that. The same people who are creating the machines and the AI and all these farms are the same people creating the systems to pay you to stay at home. They don't want you. They don't want your dignity. This is no coincidence. Not two unrelated moments. This is strategy. This is chess. Create the problem and you become the solution. The same people who created the problem are creating the solutions. Now you can control the system. You can control the tech billionaires who built the AI are going to be the same ones running the government. Actually, before, where is the government going to get this money to pay you? The people who created the problem are going to pay you to stay at home. And here's where I need to make a quick turn, because I know someone is listening and you're probably already offering some sort of rebuttal that I didn't cover already. You're probably saying, David, calm down, relax. They said the same thing about the printing press. They said the same thing about the assembly line. They said the same thing about the internet. New jobs always appear. Okay. I offer you that has usually been the case. You have been right any other time in history. Technology displaces certain kinds of work, but then it creates new categories of work. That's what's always happened. Anytime something came along, I don't know, a hand weaver, you know, and the mill came along, or I don't know, machines that gather cotton or whatever, you know, the tractors and, you know, the farmhand, you know, and all that stuff, right? New jobs were created. You had to have someone to repair the farm equipment, right? The internet, yeah, sure, maybe it killed some job for some travel agents, but it created jobs called web developers and things like this, you know. Yeah, so every time in the past, the economy did adapt. More people go back to work. Listen, I understand the argument. Right? That's how it used to go. This job leaves, these jobs are created. But here's what's fundamentally different, categorically different, theologically different this time. And I need you to just hear me out on this. Every previous wave of automation, yes, replaced physical labor or routine mechanical task. But none of those instances at any other point in time in history replaced human thinking. They only replaced human physical labor or routine mechanical task, but it never replaced human thinking. It didn't replace creativity. It didn't replace judgment, communication, analysis, management, writing, teaching, design, or even caring for people. Those jobs didn't disappear. They expanded. Because the economy needed more people like that. It needed more cognitive thinkers to manage, to deploy, to sell new machines. The jobs that automation created, by definition, jobs that required more of what makes us human, more reasoning, more relationships, more creativity, more of those things that God put in us. This time the machine thinks. This time the machine writes. This time the machine analyzes, manages, codes. They're coding themselves now. They don't even need to code anymore. They're coding themselves. They're designing, they're planning, they're arguing. The cognitive jobs that were created by previous waves of automation are gone. They don't need you to think. They're the jobs that AI is coming for first. Entry-level analysts, junior developers, copywriters, paralegals, customer service managers, financial advisors, curriculum designers, newspaper writers. The entire career ladder is gone. The human intellectual labor that used to take you from nowhere to somewhere, an American dream, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, get out of here. AI has taken a saw and destroyed that ladder. Now, I feel bad for 20, 18-year-olds going to college and going to get a degree in something that needs their brain. Sure, there are going to be a few jobs here and there, but it's going to be so few that are needed that it's going to be like a new form of elitism. You're going to look at people and say, oh, you have a job? You have a job? You go to work? So when someone says new jobs will be created, I need to ask, created for whom? Because if AI can do the new jobs faster, cheaper than any human being, and it already can do for most of them, then what exactly are you going to be hired for to do? Why do they need you? You're not creating new. You're not creating new employment. You're creating new productivity for machines, and the human being is being left on the sideline. Sam Altman, Elon Musk, all these other people that's in this whole thing, they have an answer for you. Just stay at home. Here's a check. Go. I don't know. Knit. And don't try to sell what you just knitted, because the machines can knit better than you. And it's even happening in my own life. You know, you guys know I have I have a supply business. And I have, five or seven sales agents. My sales manager just fires and hires people all the time. It's hard for me to keep up. But so I have sales agents, and they find clients to sell things to. And they send me, when they sell things, they send me email, with the invoice. I go to, authorize.net, charge it. Then I usually send it to my daughter to go procure what they're looking for. She orders it. Some stuff we ship directly, and then other things she'll ship to the house of my other daughter, who then pack it and create the shipping labels. And then my sister will come to her house and take it to the post office to mail it off. So I have a whole system here. It's a family company, basically. We all work together to try to, make some wealth for everybody. And so, but here's what I started doing just last week. You guys see me, that experiment I had with Claude. I found out that Claude is brilliant, a brilliant brain. But I was still back then just using Claude for the old school AI. Ask the question, it gives you an answer. It's a brilliant when it comes to answering. But what I found out is that if I partner Claude with something called OpenAI, let me tell you what happened. So I told you the system, right? My salespeople sell things. They send me, email me the invoice. Let me tell you what happened this week. I connected Claude, and now Claude checks all my emails all day long because it's being managed by a worker on OpenClaw. So now in the morning, someone checked all my emails, went and processed all the orders. I just come to my computer and the order is already up there. I just process it. And when the shipping is created, they go back to my email, find the tracking slips, put them in my logistics manager, sends the customer the tracking slip for the thing that they ordered. All this is going on just while I sleep. At St. Thomas Media, I thought I was going to put out 3 books this year. I definitely was going to put out 2, but I was working on 3. But I had like 5 other books in my folder that were just arduous to edit. And they're just really complicated. One of the authors is an amazing book, but he's dead. So I did the same thing. I had OpenClaw and Claude work together to work on these books to get them to the point where the human eye can now do the typesetting and things like that. This is the world that we're living in. So yeah, we can use the technology to do things faster and cheaper and better and who am I not to use the technology to help people live a better spiritual life? But at the same time, we still have to figure out a way to use the technology to not replace the human person. The technology is good. It's helped me. But it can't. We can't come to this place where it replaces the human dignity. So here's what we do with this. First, we have to stop being surprised, right? So this is where the logic of purely materialist profit maximizing economy always ends up. If the human person has no intrinsic value beyond what they produce, then the moment something produces more than what they can do, then we become obsolete. The Catholic Church has been warning about this exact thing, this exact logic, since the Industrial Revolution. So we have to just keep listening. Second, Catholics who are engineers, economists, legislators, and executives have to start leaving their faith at the church door and inside the mass and start bringing it to the boardroom. Because the questions that are being decided right now about AI are not just technical matters. They're not just bottom line, the financial bottom line issues. These are questions about what it means to be human. And the church has real answers. Answers that were developed centuries ago, tested by history, and rooted in something that no algorithm can replace, the truth about the human person. You are in a position to say no to this. You are in a position to design systems differently. You are in a position to build something that just doesn't optimize profits, but optimizes human flourishing. And if you're not doing that, if you're just picking and taking your paycheck and outsourcing your conscience, then you are complicit in the largest reduction of human dignity since slavery. And I need you to hear that as love, not as judgment, but I need you to hear it. Third, if you're one of those 1,100 people who got that Cloudflare email or email from Amazon or email from one of those other places, and you're sitting at your desk right now and you're afraid about what's next, or you're sitting at home wondering, what do I do next? I want you to hear this directly. Your dignity does not live in your job title. If your job became your identity and that's how you lived, you failed. And you need to hear that. You failed. Your dignity was not there. Your value is not calculated by your output. You're not a unit of labor. You're not a cost to be optimized. You were made in the image and likeness of God. And no restructuring, no memo, no agentic AI system, no universal high income, universal basic income check from the federal government can change that. Not ever. So the machines may be getting smarter, but they're not ever going to get holier. Machines cannot love. They cannot sacrifice. They cannot choose the good, the right over the wrong. They cannot stand in solidarity when someone is suffering. They cannot hope. The machines cannot repent. They cannot forgive. They cannot process. They can process language, sure, but they cannot speak the truth. Not the kind of truth that sets people free. That kind of truth only comes from people made in the image and likeness of God, because it's inside of you. And at the end of the day, that's the only race that matters. This has been David O. Gray in the morning. Stay in the truth, and I'll catch you on the Saturday. No, on the Monday, God willing. Let me get to a couple of your comments before we head out of here. John B. said, people treating their work as our identity is treating work as an idol. Man, that's powerful. That is so true. But a lot of people are lost right now because they did that very thing. So we will get there one way or the other. But this is David Gray in the morning. I'll catch you guys in the next one. Have a blessed weekend. But until then, next time, blessings and peace to you. Answer yours.
Hey, yo, wake up. Yeah. New day, new mercy, fresh light on the way. Coffee in the cup, let the silence pray. Word for your walk, truth for your mind. We read the signs, but we don't lose time. Culture talk, scripture sharp. Faith with rhythm, intellect with heart. No panic, no noise, just wisdom and grace. Morning hits different when you start in this place. Wake up, yeah. Tap in right now, let the truth hit soft, let it hit profound. Wake up, don't scroll past prayer. It's David L. Gray in the morning. Kind of morning that don't fade away. Like it, yeah. Let it play, share it, yeah. Pass it on your way, sub up, don't hesitate. David L. Gray in the morning, don't be late. Mm-hmm.